It is October 6th, 2022. 1644 hours. Ward Green here. One of the things I want to do today is... Well, I forgot what I was going to say. There was something I wanted to say here at the beginning. I want to do something... First of all, I got to get something... My cam has to be set up so I can see myself. There we go. So maybe that'll help. Let's see. So that I could pop it up and just drag it off to one side, resize, and reposition so it's out of sight, but I can see and watch myself. That's pretty good. The program OBS Studio is really great. Open source, free program. I want to reiterate that because it's such a great thing. And it has a lot of uses too. I'm only using it for doing my daily videos. Oh yeah, I there's a lot of things that I probably will try to mention today, but one of the things... This is probably not whatever I was thinking at the beginning of the video, that's gone. I can't remember what that was right now. But the idea that I wanted to talk about was every false religion, every false organization, or false religious organization. Yeah. Every false religious organization will set up, and I'm not pointing fingers at anyone, I'm just saying, they will set up, they will interpret the scriptures they will use the scriptures to justify what they're doing. So if they're not really doing the right things, they won't be able to use as many of the scriptures. That's one thing. And they will hide the scriptures, and they'll ignore the scriptures that contradict what they're doing and saying. So they will emphasize certain scriptures. And so the best religious organizations will be using more of the scriptures. So that's one idea. I wanted to bring that up. Well, yeah, the other point. Yeah, there's another point here. As I was doing my minor review here, my prep, I just glanced over the beginning of the Psalm 6 and Ecclesiastes 6. I noticed a thought came to me that sometimes when you quote the scriptures, people say, well, that's from the Bible. Yeah, if you tell it, you don't have to tell them it's from the Bible, first of all. That might work better. But if you do tell them it's from the Bible, they might say, either to you or to themselves, they might say, well, that's the Bible. I don't want to have anything to do with the Bible. Or, you know, that's something to do with, if I do that, if I follow the Bible, I'll have to do all these other things. And I don't want to do those. I don't want to obey those commands. Therefore, I'm not going to listen to what you're telling me. Or I'm skeptical. I'm not going to... They may not be against it completely, but they might be of the attitude, well, I don't trust that, you know, that sort of attitude, because it's in the Bible, and the Bible says other things with which I do not agree. So, the answer to that I wanted to bring up today was that the Bible's there for your benefit. It's not there to be... you know, berating you, or, you know, it's there for discipline, but it's not, you don't have to use it in such a way as, you know, by bashing yourself over the head with it. I mean, you don't have to use the Bible in an abusive way, or you don't have to take it in the worst way in a way that is the worst for you. That's what I mean. You can take it, you can use the Bible in a way that benefits you. You can use the scriptures and the principles only when they benefit you. You can do that. That's perfectly acceptable. That's what it's meant for. That's how the principles are meant to be used. They're meant to be used to benefit you. It's intended for your benefit. That's something I think most people don't understand about the scriptures. So if that's the case, and it is the case, but if that's the case, you have to know the whole Bible, all the scriptures, before you can really be able to choose the right one to apply to a certain situation because it might not be the one you think you should be applying. Like one scripture might tell you, well, I shouldn't do this because this scripture says that. But there might be five other scriptures that say, well, you should do that because these scriptures say this. So it helps to know the whole Bible. Okay, little children, let's try and read Psalm 6 and Ecclesiastes 6 today. And let's pray right now to Jehovah. Jehovah, our Father in heaven, please help us in our study today. And in whatever situation we are, whether we've prepared the study or not, help us to benefit from it in the way that pleases you and makes us happy. And all these things we ask in Jesus' name. Amen. It says to the director on stringed instruments on the lower octave, a melody of David. O Jehovah, do not in your anger reprove me, and do not in your rage correct me. Show me favor, O Jehovah, for I am fading away. Heal me, O Jehovah, for my bones have been disturbed. Yes, my own soul has been very much disturbed. And you, O Jehovah, how long? Do return, O Jehovah. Do rescue my soul. Save me for the sake of your loving kindness. For in death there is no mention of you. In Sheol, who will laud you? I have grown weary with my sighing. All night long I make my couch swim with my tears. I make my own divan overflow. From vexation my eye has become weak. It has grown old because of all those showing hostility to me. Get away from me, all you practicers of what is hurtful, for Jehovah will certainly hear the sound of my weeping. Jehovah will indeed hear my request for favor. Jehovah himself will accept my own prayer. All my enemies will be very much ashamed and disturbed. They will turn back. They will be ashamed instantly. That's Psalms chapter 6. So that has some interesting thoughts. How in his prayer to Jehovah, David says his enemies are going to be ashamed and turn back. They're going to be ashamed instantly. I mean, how does he know that, right? Like he must have experienced that already, it implies, or he just has enough faith to believe that. Jehovah will certainly hear the sound of my weeping. Now, these are psalms. So this was a song that he was singing a song when he was... So he's praying to Jehovah, but then the last line of it sounds like he's not asking Jehovah. He's just making a statement. And in verse 9 as well, Jehovah will indeed hear my request for favor. Jehovah will indeed. So he's almost not talking to Jehovah in that part of the song. He's singing maybe some kind of a chorus or something in the song where he's, you know, singing to the audience, whoever it is, or to himself if he's alone, but he could also be singing it to Jehovah. It just sounds like he might be not just to Jehovah, because he mentioned Jehovah's name, so that it's clear to whomever is listening that he's referring to Jehovah, even though, you know, somebody else, if he just said, he will indeed hear my request for favor, then the person listening might think that you meant him rather than Jehovah. So, from vexation, my eyes become weak. Yeah, he talks about how he's not healthy here. Something's wrong. His bones have been disturbed. He's fading away. In verse 2, I mean, whether it's spiritual illness or whether it's physical illness, it could be both. He's been crying in verse 6. And that's when Psalms can lift us up, is when we see that other people, like King David, he was the king of Israel, a very powerful person to Jehovah's people. Indeed, he was very powerful, and yet he cried at night. And he prayed for help from Jehovah. Show me favor in verse 2, O Jehovah. He prayed for help. He prayed for Jehovah's favor. Ecclesiastes chapter 6. There exists a calamity that I have seen under the sun, and it is frequent among mankind. A man to whom the true God gives riches and material possessions and glory, and who for his soul is in no need of anything that he shows himself longing for, and yet the true God does not enable him to eat from it, although a mere foreigner may eat it. This is vanity, and it is a bad sickness. If a man should become a father 100 times, and he should live many years, so that numerous the days of his years should become, yet his own soul is not satisfied with good things, and even the grave has not become his, I must say that one prematurely born is better off than he is. For in vain has this one come, and in darkness he goes away, and with darkness his own name will be covered. Even the sun itself he has not seen, neither known. This one has rest rather than the former one. Even supposing that he has lived 1,000 years twice over, and yet he has not seen what is good, is it not to just one place that everyone is going? All the hard work of mankind is for their mouth, but even their own soul does not get filled. For what advantage does the wise have over the stupid one? What does the afflicted one have in knowing how to walk in front of the living ones? Better is the seeing by the eyes than the walking about of the soul. This too is vanity and a striving after the wind. Whatever has come to be, its name has already been pronounced. And it has become known what man is, and he is not able to plead his cause with one that is more powerful than he is. Because there exist many things that are causing much vanity, what advantage does a man have? For who is there knowing what good a man has in life for the number of the days of his vain life when he spends them like a shadow? For who can tell man what will happen after him under the sun? Ecclesiastes chapter 6. Well, they were very short, both of those short chapters, and it makes our study relatively simple today. But we could see that this was a good connection between Psalm 6 and Ecclesiastes 6. Not that there ever was any connection in the past, because in the time of David, Solomon wrote Ecclesiastes, evidently probably after David wrote his psalm, but because he was the son of David. But the thing is, David, there's no correlation in the number six either. That's what I mean, because these numbers six were added very much long after Jesus walked on the earth. I mean, these are, you know, much later numbers that were put in, so it doesn't mean anything, the fact that the numbers coincide, except that there seems to be maybe some correspondence between the ideas here, that a man can be suffering a great deal during his life, like David did, in, as he mentioned in Psalm 6, where he was crying at night. He wasn't having a great time all the time, although he could have been if he'd been rejoicing in his tribulation, like Jesus said to do, and or like James says to do, and like Jesus said about persecution, to rejoice in it. But the thing is, we might know we should rejoice, and yet sometimes it's difficult to do that, and we do suffer. I mean, there's no question. There's suffering, and that's what Ecclesiastes also mentions, that it's better in a way, much better in a way, to have been prematurely born and to have died before you even saw the sun, than to be suffering day after day, day after day after day, through all the things or working hard day after day after day and never really getting to enjoy the fruit of your efforts. I mean, it's a terrible sickness, a bad sickness. In verse 2, Solomon writes, evidently it's Solomon who wrote Ecclesiastes. So we have a lot of interesting things to look forward to. Tomorrow is the LIV Golf in Bangkok. It begins. The U.S. Chess Championships are underway. Hans Niemann has won his first game. He's playing at the moment, I believe. I'm not following it right at the moment. I guess we could be following it, but the live coverage, I don't know if I can go to his game specifically and follow it, but they did show it for a moment on the live coverage. But what I did want to show you is the song that was being played by Angelo DeBar and Jazz Manouche in Rome, February 2nd, 2013. Let's see here. Right. Let's see if this works. Thank you. So that was extremely nice. That was called Django Tiger. And let me see now. What do I want to do here? Let's see. Yeah, I'll try to drag this. Maybe we can talk about some other things now. Yeah. A couple of window resizings. There we go. How's that? It's not. Okay, that's better. Yeah. So I don't know where I can look here. Yeah. I've got to look this way to keep the reflections off. But I'm just thinking the Django Reinhardt was a very well known, and he's revered. He's a well known gypsy jazz guitar player. And like I said, I don't know how many instruments he played, whether he played, maybe he didn't even play guitar. I'm gonna Google him right now. I think I'm gonna find out what's going on here. With his, who was he? But Django Reinhardt is the person, almost certainly, after whom that song is named. DJANGOREINHARDT or T? DT. Okay, spelled with a D at the end. A DT at the end, I should say. He was Romani. He's a guitar player, right? But he may well have played other instruments. Okay. He wrote Minor Swing. I didn't know he wrote Minor Swing. That's a song. And Daphne he wrote. He wrote Swing 42. I didn't know any of those. I knew that he wrote Nuage. It's another song he wrote. So, there's so many guitar players nowadays who have emulated Django Reinhardt since his passing. He passed in May 1953. By the way, I wanted to mention the previous video, yesterday's video, in which, I mean, the video, the song, If I Had You, that I showed yesterday, which was done, let me think now, this window's too bright, it was done in 2018, the recording by Yosho Stefan, live in Germany. That was apparently recorded. It was at the beginning of the video that it showed that it was done in 2013, which I didn't know. So, at the time I was not sure. The YouTube video was 2020, but live in Germany, which I can now click on just to. I'm gonna have to mute it though, I think. Let's mute it. There we go. Now I can sort of drag. See what. This has been edited, maybe. Maybe not. Here it is. June. Okay, June 2018. Okay, that's when it was. Well, that's what it says it was. That's when it says it was. So hopefully that's right. And he was with Richard Smith, another well-known guitar player, he's played a lot with. Richard Smith has played a lot with other players, like with Tommy Emmanuel and other great guitar players, because Richard Smith is a great guitar player in his own right. I mean, extremely great guitar player, as is Yosho, and as is Angelo DeBar, whom we just saw today, and many others. I mean, the man he's playing, the man that Angelo is playing with is also a wonderful, if not a great guitar player. I mean, they're all very, very talented. I mean, there's a number. There's such a great number, it seems like. Borelli Legrand is another one, and we've already mentioned. Stokolo Rosenberg from Holland. Borelli Legrand is from France. Angelo DeBar is from France, I believe, or they're French. And Yosho Stefan is German. Richard Smith is, from his accent, he's English or from somewhere over in that area, whether it's England or Wales, or I think he sounds English to me, the accent, but I wouldn't know definitively from the accent, perhaps. We should look him up. Okay, let's look him up. I wonder if he has a YouTube entry. Oh. Wait a minute. There's a Richard Smith who's an American guitarist in California. Oh, there's an English. Okay, there's also an English. Here he is, the English guitar player, guitarist. He specializes in fingerstyle, like Merle Travis, Chet Atkins, Jerry Reed played. Those three guitar players also, but they're not current. They don't play nowadays. Their previous generation of guitar players, a previous generation. Okay. So Richard Smith is 50 years old. Yosho is 43, I believe. Yosho Stefan. There aren't many people with the name Yosho in the Wikipedia, actually. Not many, so. He is. That's interesting. They give his birth date. They don't give his age, so we have to work that out ourselves. Apparently, he's 43 years old. And I saw that somewhere else that he was 43 years old. So, still pretty young for a person of such talent, too. I mean, but of course, you get your technique when you're fairly young, because it's much harder to develop technique later in life on an instrument or in any field. If you're a sports person who plays sports, if you take it up very late in life, it's hard to develop the technique. Harder, much harder. So, I've been researching more cameras. I've looked into the Canon EOS 90D series of that series, EOS series of SLR cameras. But they're limited in 30 minutes for videos. You can only, I mean, two. They're limited to 30 minutes. You can do up to 30 minutes. Up to 30 minutes. No more than 30 minutes for a video. That's a severe limitation, I believe. I make videos longer than 30 minutes all the time. But of course, in this case, I'm recording it on my screen or using OBS Studio, so it wouldn't matter. I could use the camera as my webcam instead, and I could still make a recording that would be that would be more than 30 minutes, because I wouldn't be recording it on the camera. But the problem here's the I want to talk about the problem with buying any technology. Okay, this is the real problem why I've purchased things in the past, right, which were expensive, high quality technology. I've done this in the past. Oh, I own a Minolta X700 SLR, single lens reflex analog camera, like a film camera, right? So I've and one of the reasons is money. I forget what the camera cost. It was probably a $500 camera, I think it was, something like that, back when I bought it. And it's probably wasn't the top of the line. It was pretty close to the top of the line for a camera. But then the lenses, I couldn't afford to buy a lens. It came with a lens, I think. So I used the lens that it came with, which is a 50 millimeter probably, or something like that. I think, 50 millimeters was the standard, right? Using 35 millimeter film with a 50 millimeter focal length lens, which is a different focal length if you use a 50 millimeter lens on a different digital sensor. On today's cameras with the digital sensors, they don't look the same. That's why I use the website DOF Simulator, DOF Simulator, to simulate the depth of field, but it also simulates everything. It simulates how the person is framed. You enter in the camera and the model you have, and then you enter the lens, the focal length of the lens, and you enter. So the focal length and how far away the subject is, and it will tell you, show you exactly what it looks like. So you can see that it's, and I don't need to experiment. I just believe that it's correct. But you could experiment by testing all the different cameras and see that it's calculating everything correctly. But, you know, these digital cameras, like if I buy a 25mm lens for a digital camera, like the Sony A6000, which I was researching, but if I put that into the simulator, the dofsimulator.com simulator, it gives me the 25mm, it actually gives me, like normally 25mm makes everything smaller because it's a wide angle lens. It makes everything look small and the picture look big, and your subject is small in the center of the picture. So if you look at, but the 25mm looks more like a 35mm or some other number, I forget what the number is. It's a bigger number. Like, it works as though you were using a regular full-frame camera instead of the smaller digital array. The full-frame camera of a bigger, with a bigger lens, a bigger focal length lens, like 50mm or 40 or 30. A 25 is going to look more like 30, 40, or 50, or somewhere more than 25, which means that your face gets bigger than you would think. So it's 20. It says it's 25, but 25 normally is a wide angle lens. It won't be as wide as it seems because it's a digital smaller frame for the actual focal plane of the film, of the digital film. Anyway, I haven't even studied it. I've interpreted all this quickly and understood it quickly from my having read a few things. So I might even be wrong about any of this, but I think I'm right though. But anyway, this is I understand it well enough now that I can go out and research all the different things. I can use that simulator. Anyone can. You can use that simulator, DOF simulator, to simulate what things are going to look like, but I can't vouch for whether it's correct or not. I believe it is, so I'm going to be using it, and then I'll confirm it by checking with another simulator site somewhere else. But before I purchase something, because these cameras are not cheap, but the problem with any of them, coming back to my Minolta. My Minolta, I bought the camera for $500, but I couldn't afford any lenses. I mean, one lens costs $1,000. Of a telephoto lens, I mean. So, and even some of the wide-angle lenses, they're probably $500. They're just not cheap. So I did buy one wide-angle lens, and I forget the company. It wasn't a Minolta, because that would have been too expensive, so I had to buy from another company. It was compatible with Minolta, but you have to buy the lens that is compatible with your camera as well, because all the cameras have different mounting systems as well. So I bought a lens that was a wide angle that fit my camera, and I bought one telephoto that fit my camera, but I had to buy a mirror lens. I think it was 500 millimeters. It wasn't telephoto. I couldn't adjust it. Maybe it was telephoto in the single focal length telephoto, if that's called telephoto. It wasn't a zoom lens. That's what it is. So it was a telephoto with no zoom. So I had 500 millimeters, and I paid maybe I paid $250 for that, or maybe I paid, I don't think I paid 500. I'm not sure, but I might have. These were not cheap. The lenses I bought, and the 25 millimeter lens, or 35, whatever, whichever one I bought, was probably a few hundred dollars, but, or maybe it was, you know, maybe it was a little less than a few hundred. I don't know, but it was, there, it's a lot of money when you buy the lenses, not just the cameras. And the lenses usually, or often, can cost more when you consider all the lenses you need. If I buy a C100, I think that's a Canon, if I buy a, it's a cinema camera, I could buy one for maybe $3,000 Canadian if it has a lens with it. And you need a lens. You can't just buy the body of the camera. You can buy the body by itself, but you still need to buy a lens if you want to use the camera. So the lenses are just not at all cheap either. So, and you know, I might be interested in having a cinema camera, but the problem with it is that we know that next year there's going to be a better cinema camera for less money. And that's been true for some time, right? I mean, if we go back far enough, maybe to the beginning of technology, that wasn't true. Every year there wouldn't be a brand new big improvement for much less money. But nowadays, at any moment, somebody could come out with, particularly Apple, because they're the richest company in the world. They could come out with, at any time, a new product that is much less money, that's much better technology. At any time that they want, Apple could do that. I mean, obviously, they need help from a lot of people to do it. All their people, they need help from the chip manufacturers in Taiwan or wherever they're doing that. They need a lot of help from Jehovah to for it all to go smoothly and for it to work and to have it come out well. But Apple can do that whenever they so choose. They can at least attempt anytime they choose to do that. And that's the reason why it's so unwise to put money into a new product. Or, I mean, it's very wise to put money into a new product. You don't want to buy necessarily an old product. I just mean, you could buy an old product, but I'm just saying, you don't want to buy an expensive product. That's what I'm saying. Or very high technology, because it costs a lot more money to buy the very best technology. You don't want to buy that necessarily, because the upgrade path is very expensive from that. If you want to upgrade from that, it's an expensive upgrade path potentially, or you know, or you have to be sort of faithful that you believe that in the near future there's going to be a cheaper option, you're going to be able to upgrade. But even then, if there's going to be a cheaper option in the near future, why would you buy an expensive product now? That doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? So I don't see the sense in buying this. Now, I bought my new iPad recently. The camera in that machine is not that good. I should say, I mean, I don't, it's neither is the camera in my MacBook Pro that I'm using right now. It's not all that good either. Neither is the camera in my iPhone 6S, which nor in my old iPad for that matter either, obviously. But it's, the problem is the low light. In part, that's the problem. And so when you buy these new, if I want to buy a better camera, I have to look at low light, and that's always the challenge for any camera, is to produce good quality in low light. And you usually pay more to get that. The sensor has to be much better designed, and a much more sensitive digital array that detects the light. You know, it has to be more sensitive to light in order to work well in low light. And you want it to be low noise, so that it doesn't produce a lot of noise in low light. Random noise, electrical random noise, which is typical in conditions. You notice it more in low light because there's no light coming in to drown out the digital noise. So these are the problems in cinematography with low light and noise that I'm concerned about. They're the reason why I'm interested in getting another camera. But I'm not convinced at this point. Now, if I have money that I'm going to be tempted to waste it on something else, then it might be a good investment to spend it on a camera, right? If I'm tempted to waste it on something that is not so useful, then maybe I should spend it. So, I mean, maybe I'll try to save money for a while. If I try to save money, I might then be tempted to buy something. Like, I might be tempted to buy a new car, or tempted to buy a new, something else new, you know, a new piece of technology. I might be tempted to buy the new iPhone or the new iPad or an iPad Pro or something, But when I bought my new iPad recently, I was going to say, I bought the one that was this last year's model, basically. Yeah, the Generation 9, because I knew it was already tried and tested. They're saying good things about it. I don't have to worry about it. So rather than wait for a new one to come out and then maybe find out after I buy it that it has problems, if I buy it right after it's released, that would be not such a wise decision. So I bought last year's model, and I didn't buy the same model as I bought originally. My model was the iPad Air 2, which is the iPad Air, whereas this is just a plain old iPad, but it's so many generations later. iPad Air 2 compared to Generation 2, in other words, compared to Generation 9, which was the iPad I just bought, which is not an iPad Air. That makes it not as good, except it's a much later generation, so it is better than the old one. Plus, I'm able to run... Oh, what was I running? I can probably upgrade, too. The OS can be upgraded, but I'm still running 15.6 instead of 15.5, which I'm running on the old one right now. iPad OS 15.6. But because it's a newer iPad, it's able to implement the features of iPad OS more fully than the iPad Air 2 from 2016 was when I bought it. So now the iPad Air 2, I can leave it turned off. So the battery, I checked it after a couple of days of being turned off, and the battery still said 100%. So I can turn the battery off on that, probably leave it for a couple of months and then check the battery and see. Or I'll check it again now because it's been about a week maybe. But I'll check it every so often. Then when I know how fast it loses charge, I'll charge it as often as I need to then to keep that battery working. But that old iPad, I can use it as a backup in case something happens to my new one. And it's always good to have a backup. Just good to have. So, and that old battery I will replace. But there's no point in replacing it at the present time, maybe. Because there might be, actually, because if I get a brand new battery... No, there isn't, because I won't be using it anyway, so it'll be turned off. So if I wait, all the batteries that are being manufactured today, if they're just sitting on the shelf, gradually losing charge, that'll be the same as it would be doing if I had it inside my iPad. So there's no benefit in replacing the battery now. I might as well just wait until it needs to be replaced. But the new one is a brand new battery, and it's turned off too. So the new battery is going to be keeping 100% charge for that much longer than the old one. So, I mean, the old 6-year-old battery, it's just about had it. It's down to 70 or 80% of its original capacity. So this new one is pretty well 100%, or was it more than 100%? I'm trying to remember what it was compared to the... No, it was less. It was 90% of the original, of the design capacity, I think. That's what the new one has. So it should be good for, you know, a long time if I don't use it, if I don't turn it on all the time, if it's not left on all the time. Even if I'm charging it all the time, if it's left on all the time, it's going to be wearing it out. If I just compared to, because it'll be discharge, charge ever so slightly as it's being plugged in, or it's running hotter too. It's deteriorating at a higher temperature. So if I leave it turned off, it'll just last a lot longer. At least that's my current understanding anyway. So that's what I'm doing with my iPads right now. My iPhone is also off. Everything is off, turned off. And I'm just amazed I didn't realize that you could do that. When I first bought my iPad and my iPhone, I never turned them off. I didn't even know I could turn them off, really. I mean, I don't know why I didn't know that. Well, partly because you want to turn them on and keep them on because you want to have incoming calls, or, you know, you want to be able to flip them open and they come on. They're in standby mode. I didn't realize that would wear out the battery. So I've learned a lot. I've learned an immense amount just from that, from these last 6 years with those two devices. So now in the future, I won't turn on a device unless I want to use it, unless I need to use it. And my iPhone is now my backup phone. camera. I mean, my backup camera, in a sense, to this one, because I can do more with this camera. Namely, I can show things on the internet while I'm talking. Because of OBS Studio, that free program, amazing program. Everything that's so amazing about technology is not really being probably implemented by most people in the way that it could be. I don't doubt that, because I'm a scientific, technical engineering type, you know, what do we call that type of person? A tech guy or something, or the tech department kind of guy. I'm a tech department kind of guy in a way. And I'm not aware of a lot of the things probably still, but I wasn't using a lot of the features of the devices that I could be using, and or nor was I optimizing my usage of software, and nor am I now. I know I'm not. But there are many devices and features that are meant to be used. There are many programs, many software programs that you can get for free. I've got DOSBox running now on my Monterey OS, on my M1 MacBook Pro, and it's a free program, DOSBox. It enables you to run DOS and Windows 3.1, but mainly DOS is what I wanted to run. You could probably run Windows XP as well, if you can figure that out. If I could do that, I wouldn't need my old iMac, so that's a possible way I can go there too. But it takes time to develop, you know, to install things and develop the understanding of what you need to do to install these things so that you can run them on Apple Silicon. But I haven't even tried yet the new programs, like QEMU, QEMU that is, and what's the other one? What's it called? I forget the other name for that type of program. But it's a VirtualBox type of environment. It's an emulation. It's an emulation system, so you can emulate other devices on Apple Silicon. So you can emulate an Intel device on Apple Silicon. That's the idea. You know, it would be fun. It takes a lot of time. And I mean, when I say it takes a lot of time, I'm not meaning, it comes across wrong when I say that. I mean, you have to have nothing to do. Like, when I say it takes time, I don't mean, well, you got to be on a tight time budget, and it takes a lot of time means, I don't mean you have to allocate 3 hours every day for a week between the hours of such and such. I don't mean that. I mean, it takes a lot of time means you have to have nothing to do. You have to be so bored and unable to find a single thing to do with your time that you start to say, well, maybe I'll try QEMU and try to get it installed and see what happens. You have to be, like, that's what I mean by it takes time. You have to be bored because you've got everything else done. So, like, today I'm putting out my cardboard garbage, for example. I had to get that done. Usually there's something to do every day that has to be done. But yesterday I trimmed my trees in my hedge that were trees growing in my hedge. I had to remove them, and I trimmed the tree in the front. I just cut all the branches right down to the ground. It's just a stump. It's a little bush that I cut down to the ground. I've been cutting it down to the ground every winter, or just before winter. So, you know, next year it'll start to sprout and so on, but it'll be a new bush. But this is the first year I actually was able to let it grow, and it grew without bugs eating all the leaves. This is the first year that's happened, so normally I had to trim it down a lot earlier during the year. Every other year prior to this, since I had that little bush. But now that bush got it, I could have left it all until next year, and it would have been fine. This is the first year that that's happened. But I cut it all the way down again, so it'll start to sprout again. It's less work to trim it too, if it's not getting so big. I've got a lot of trees that still need trimming, probably still. Well, I know they do. In the back, which I want to get to. Today it rained, so I can't do outdoor work today because it rained. Could have done it earlier because it wasn't raining. Beautiful day too. What's the temperature today? I probably did check. Oh, it's very warm, though. Yeah, it's too warm. See, it's 23 degrees Celsius, which is way too warm to do any work, unless you want to sweat. You know, I don't mind sweating. It's not that. I don't like the laundry that it creates, all sorts of laundry. And plus, I have to wash my body. You know, I mean, it's like, it's a lot of work. And to even consider that. But it's not just, it's not that I don't want to wash my body either. It's just, I won't be able to work. Look, it's the laundry. It creates laundry. And I don't mind working. I avoid working in the sun, for one thing. But, I mean, that's just not good for you. It's not good for your eyes, but it burns up it runs your biological clock much faster. If you work in the sun, you're going to end up dying probably, if you know, 10 years earlier or 20 years earlier, because your biology will have worn itself out and gone through more of the DNA cycles, you know, of the regeneration process. So, I mean, it's something to consider, how much you want to work in the sun. If you can avoid the sun, that's good, I think. But you can't always avoid it, so it's fine to get, it's good to get, actually healthy to be in the sun for your, it's bad for your eyes if it causes cataracts, which it can, I believe, but it's also good for your eyes because you get light in your eyes, through, in the glands behind your eyes, which need light in order to function properly, like the pituitary and other glands that regulate your metabolism and your body's use of calcium and the proper functioning of all the different systems in the body. So sunlight is very good. I'm not even saying that. It sounds like I'm saying that sunlight's no good, but it's the opposite. It's just that sunlight will basically kill you earlier if you get too much of it. You can preserve your life by staying out of the sun. Well, it also eats away at your skin, like it completely destroys your skin, at least in the case of somebody with fair skin like me. I think it's a lot less damaging for people with darker skin. They have a big advantage, and they should be in the sun probably, because their bodies are meant to be in the sun. Your skin is meant to be exposed to the sun, possibly. That's why it's so dark. It can do it. It can absorb the light without being destroyed by the sun. So how did I get into that topic of the fact that I have things to do every day? That's what it was. Today I did the garbage. Yesterday I did work outside. And I did that very much at the end of the day, so I avoided the sun. It was almost getting dark. I think it was after sunset when I did it. But it was, you know, you can do things after sunset. You can find ways to be outdoors when the sun isn't so harmful. Like, the worst time has got to be noon if you want to be damaged. Or if you don't want to be damaged, is avoid going out at noon. Yeah, the worst time is noon-ish. And any time, if you go out in the morning and you're not quite finished and you keep working through noon, it's a temptation to work onwards past noon if you go out in the morning. So it's, for me, it's better to go out in the afternoon because there's no temptation to go past noon. I'll just go out and work. And well, as I get older, there's not much temptation to do more work anyway, but because I'm not really, you know, able to do maybe as much, I suppose. Hopefully I will be able to do more as my body adjusts and I lose weight having quit sugar. Now that I don't eat processed sugar, I'm hoping my body, and my tooth gets hopefully better. It's still very inflamed here, so that takes away a lot of energy. There's not much we can do about that. But Jehovah knows. Jehovah can make me better. So I go out in the afternoon and I work. I can work later in the afternoon and I can keep going, you know, until dark if I want, if I need to, or if I want to, if I'm able to. So. Yeah, I wanted to make this video. It's interesting. People don't want to. Ben Feingold said that chess players don't want to play against lesser players because it hurts their rating. And that's a good, if they lose or if they don't win, it hurts their rating. So that's just one of the realities. If you play against a player with a higher rating and you win, that raises your rating. So if you play against people who are equal to you and you do well, that doesn't hurt your rating. So it hurts your rating when you play against a lesser player and you lose. So that's just one of the things that is to do with concerns chess and the top players. But that's true in a lot of, it's not just true in chess, it's true in every area of life. People like to play with other people who are on par with them, right? Like musicians play with other great musicians. As we see with the examples that we're looking at now, when we watch these great gypsy jazz guitarists and they're playing with other great players. They don't play with, they're not spending their time trying to find players who aren't as good as they are, because that would lower their ability, whereas playing with good players raises their ability. So it's not just about ratings in chess. When you play a good player, you play better too. There's no need to play well against a lesser player. So it's raising the whole game level. Now so that's true in areas that are more serious, you know, that are not games but are more serious. The same thing applies. If we want to do important work of any kind, it's better to work with good people, with skilled, highly skilled people, than with lesser skilled people, less skilled people. So that's a very good point. Yeah. So how do we develop skill is one question, right? I guess would be the question that would follow from that. How can someone develop skill so they can play with the good players? And I believe the main way is to watch these players and listen to them. Listen and watch what they do. And then do your own thing as well. But the main thing is listening to them. I'm listening to their music now, a lot of their music, and eventually it'll crystallize in my brain somehow, I believe, in my body, my brain, my soul. I'll take it in, it'll come out again in the form of something that I do, whether it's, it doesn't have to be music either. It could be something else I do. It could be, I could make a good speech, or I could, anything. I could build a good piece of furniture. I could do anything. But anything at all that I do, my welding steel arrived. That's what I wanted to say. Yeah, I got my welding steel. I ordered some, what did I order, 16 gauge or 20 gauge? 20 gauge? And six. Now let me find out what I ordered. Let me review what I ordered. Let's see. It's in the archives. Okay. I ordered, here it is, yeah. I think that's it. A 20 gauge and a 16 gauge sheet of steel. 24 gauge would be pretty thin. 20 gauge and 16. 16 gauge is 1/16 of an inch thick for steel. Steel plate. Steel sheet. So steel sheet, 16 gauge, that's 1/16 of an inch thick. That's pretty thick, really. It's strong. Like, it's not an eighth of an inch. That would be much stronger, but that would be a lot more expensive. I paid $60 for the 16th inch thick. It weighs 20 pounds for one sheet. The other sheet that was with it was 20 gauge, and it weighed 13 pounds. So I carried them in together. That was about a total of 33 pounds together. And the combined price was $100 for those two. They were 2 feet by 4 feet, width by length, right? 2 feet by 4 feet. And 20 gauge being thinner than a 16th of an inch, because it's a higher number is thinner in gauge numbers. 16th of an inch is 1/16, is 16 gauge. 16 gauge is 1/16 of an inch, only for steel, not for other metals, but for steel. And then I got some angle, 2x2, 3/16 of an inch thick. It weighed 10 pounds for these two pieces of angle, 4 feet long. They were 2 inches by 2 inches by 3/16 thick. They're very heavy angle. Like 3/16 is extremely strong angle iron. I can use that to build anything. Just about, I mean, you could build a car frame with it. I mean, it's kind of that sort of, up to that standard. Maybe not a car, but almost strong enough to build a car frame. Like it's, maybe it is. I mean, it's that strong. That was for those two angle iron pieces, 4 feet long, $74. So, I mean, I also ordered one piece of tubing, which was 1¼ by 1¼, 4 feet long. I didn't actually check the dimension. I didn't measure it to check. It looks small, but maybe it's 1¼ by 1¼, because that's what it's supposed to be. Just to my eye, in my imagination, it's like 3/4 inch tubing, but it's probably one. It should be 1¼ by 1¼. So that's what it almost certainly is. Where did I order these things? Steel tubing. Anyway, there it is. 4 feet long. It was $30, and it was 6 pounds, according to this. But they delivered it really quickly, too. Really fast. That's great to know, because they have a lot of good prices on their steel. Excellent prices. Steel is expensive. So I got that so I can. I want to build a chin-up bar in the basement, but some of this was for the purpose of building that chin-up bar, I believe. The angle iron. I want to weld a steel tube onto the angle iron. I've ordered something from Amazon, but we'll see what happens. Nothing is in my email. I'll check the door later and see if anything's arrived. So I could just use my welding for that to build a chin-up bar and then bolt it onto my rafters, up my joists, my ceiling joists, and then I can do chin-ups in the basement. The challenge is to design something that's not in my way, so I'm walking through there, or when I'm moving pieces around, I don't bang into it. Like, if I have long pieces of wood, I have to bring them in. I don't want it to be interfering with my, or if I have to pick up a piece of wood up and rotate it around in the shop, I don't want it to bang into this piece that I install for my chin-ups. But also, I don't want it to be so high up that when I jump up, that I have to climb up on a ladder to get to it, or that if I fall off of it, I don't want to land and hurt myself. So it's got to be the right height. And I don't want to have it be pivoting, and, you know, simple is better. Simple is always better in design. The simplest possible design. I mean, I used to think, I could design things that have hinges and do all this and that. But in the end, that's not the best design at all. It's always better to avoid all of that. Always build things that just fit in place. That's it, if possible. Don't build a hinge, because it's going to just wear out and cause issues if it doesn't wear out. I mean, of course, if you actually... are comfortable building things like that, then by all means do it. But I do a lot of planning in my designs too. A lot of planning in a lot of my designs, and still, of course, I like doing construction where I don't plan too. It's fun. It's more fun when you don't plan, but you might waste a lot of material that way. So I always plan. I always think about what is crucial to this design, that if it doesn't work, I lose everything. You know, if that element, it doesn't fit right, or if that one thing is not right, then I lose everything. I try to determine what those things are before I begin, or before I get that far in the project. I make the crucial measurement at the crucial time before. And who tells me when to do that? See, that's the thing. If there were no God, there'd be nobody to tell me that. But Jehovah tells me that. And another thing that happened the other day, all my teeth got tighter. All my teeth are tighter now. Not just my bottom, where we did the crown. We did a crown on the top too, but it was after that crown was in there for quite a while that these teeth all got tighter. All my teeth got tighter. It could be because I quit. It wasn't when I quit sugar, was it? Let me think. Yeah, it was. I think it was around that time, maybe. But it could have been before that. But it was sometime in my nutritional journey, whether it was just, I think it was possibly before I quit sugar, actually. But all my teeth got tighter. All my teeth got tighter. And, you know, my dental coordinator said, well, that's because the bone is healthy. But it's not just bones, it's the ligaments that hold the teeth. Ligaments hold the teeth in place in their sockets. Those ligaments have to be strong in order for you not to have loose teeth as well. You have to have, and calcium feeds everything. So what was I doing? Was I doing anything different with calcium? I'm trying to think. I take liquid calcium. Occasionally, I'll intersperse the liquid calcium. Instead of taking magnesium, I'll take CalMag, liquid CalMag, which has the magnesium in a much more usable and absorbable form. So it, when the magnesium stops working, I'll take the liquid CalMag, 2-to-1. And then two parts calcium for one part magnesium in terms of milligram to milligram, 2-to-1. And then I'll, you know, I just take a couple of swigs of that, and that's good for the day, really. That also helps the calcium. But the magnesium part, I wanted to mention, I wasn't taking much of it at all, but now I'm taking somewhat more, I think, than what I... After I quit sugar, I didn't need hardly any magnesium. Now I think I'm starting to need more than I was needing. If I don't take it, though, I don't get constipated. That's the thing. I'm just more constipated than I want to be sometimes, but that doesn't mean that I have a problem with bleeding because my rectum is split open, that's the problem I was having when I was eating sugar. That problem doesn't seem to exist anymore because the inflammation level is just way less. It's mind-boggling. Yeah, everything is my back, I said, is better too. Look, I'm sitting here in one position for a long time and my back isn't bothering me. My lower back is better because I quit sugar. And I eat fruit sugar when I eat fruit. Today I had the pineapple with yogurt, so that was great. But that's the only sugar that I'm really eating. So what other pressing issues do we have right now? I talked yesterday about rejoicing in persecution. Rejoice, no matter what things are happening. I mean, If your life's just miserable and no one is to blame, then it's hard to rejoice, right? But perhaps that's harder, but you can still do it. You can find a way. Find something good about life. And you can find it sometimes in listening to music that are from musicians who are great. Sometimes you can find it in looking at technology, which is new, which is wonderful. I wanted to mention Max on Max Tech. I really liked your article, Max. I mean, your video, where you talked about the choices that you have to make for your equipment, your daily use equipment, like your phone. In your case, it was your phone. But it was a great video because you said something that I completely agree with and I think is very important that people miss it, or they haven't yet learned it, and they miss it completely, which is that you have to. There's no real choice. You have to make the right decision. But it sometimes goes against what you would have preferred to do, you know, if you'd really had your druthers, you know, if you could say, well, you know, I would have loved to have chosen, I really don't like the size of this phone in my hand, you know, but I have to pick the one I don't like because it's got, you know, all the right features that I can't deny myself. And so I have to kind of bite the bullet and I have to make the choice that I don't want to do. You know, it's being that, you know, it's being realistic, you know, or being, making hard decisions, you know, being tough. That's what it is. Being tough, making the tough decisions and recognizing what's important and what isn't. That's the key to buying technology successfully. Like, if you just buy technology and you say, well, I like that one, it's a great idea, That's fine. Fantasize about it all day long, every day, but don't buy it for that reason, because that's not going to do what you need it to do necessarily, right? And if it doesn't do what you need it to do, you're going to regret that purchase every single day. So that video is really good. Like, that's exactly the kind of video that just resonates with me, like, completely, exactly. And it's a great way of thinking about design. Like, it's about design. To me, this is about design. If you're designing your equipment, that's one thing, but you can design your usage or your daily life usage of equipment. You design that. It's part of design. So you might say, well, okay, if I'm going to buy a device that has a USB-C port, then I have to get, if it has a Thunderbolt port, then I have to get some Thunderbolt drives to go with it, right? That's logical. You don't want to say, I'm going to buy the device that has a Thunderbolt port, but I can never afford to buy the Thunderbolt drives. You know, like, why would you do that? It wouldn't make sense. You could probably get something cheaper that would do USB, fast USB, but you wouldn't need Thunderbolt if you can't afford to buy the if you can't afford the drives that go with Thunderbolt, which are the Thunderbolt drives. Now, you could, but on the other hand, you could say, well, I can buy the Thunderbolt port. Yes, you could. And for now, I'll just buy the slower drives, but that are compatible with the Thunderbolt port. Make sure they're compatible. I'll buy those. And then in the future, maybe I can afford to buy the Thunderbolt drives, right? You can do it that way. That's a good way to think. That's design. That's forward upgrade path thinking. Think in terms of upgrade path. But you have to be sure that by the time you have the money to buy those drives, that the technology hasn't completely become obsolete too. Like, that's the problem with all of these things. And for somebody who doesn't buy equipment every single year, they need to think about that very, very hard and long. And on the other hand, Apple does offer an trade-in for upgrades. So you can upgrade every year. If you trade your old phone in, that's something worth mentioning, that Apple provides this trade-in, which I've never used because I keep my phones for so long that it's worthless by the time I trade it in anyway. So, I mean, I would use it. I'd trade it in rather than throw it. You can't throw it in the garbage. You got to recycle it. I would trade it in, but you won't get much money for it, is the point. I've never recycled a phone because I've never had to, because I still have the first phone I ever bought. So it's just the way I am with the technology at the moment. I'm still a lot more knowledgeable than you might think about technology, even though I haven't bought so much of it, I guess. I mean, I've changed the battery in my iPhone now, right? Twice. Changed it twice. First time is because I put in an old a battery that wasn't going to work. The second time, I think I did it right, but I didn't even use the adhesive. And why use the adhesive when I'll have to change the battery again anyway? I mean, it's going to rattle around in there, but I'm not bouncing it up and down when I go out with my phone. Maybe on my bike it'll get bounced around, so maybe I need to put the adhesive in there. But the connector is held in with a plate and a screw. It's not like that. At least is it two screws? Yeah, I think it might be two screws. Anyway, the plate for the connector for the iPhone battery is held in there, and the iPhone battery might bounce around a bit, but it would have to get a lot of bouncing before it would break anything inside. So I'm not really too concerned about the adhesive on the battery. I mean, you can do that, but then you're going to have trouble getting the battery out again. So I actually don't really see. It's a pretty tight fit anyway. There's not a lot of movement in there probably anyway, but there is some. You don't want to put a spacer in there unless it's a heat conductive spacer that can get the heat out of the phone, but, or, you know, something like that. But you don't want to put anything in that could prevent the cooling that you want to have happen inside the phone. And air is not the best conductor of heat because it doesn't have enough mass. Air conducts heat pretty well because it diffuses around, it moves around. The air molecules bounce around, but there's no mass. So there's not enough heavy molecules bouncing around to conduct the heat. A solid thing, metal, a solid conductor, heat conductor like, well, not steel, but aluminum, is better, much better than steel, and or copper is even better, conducts heat because of the way that its natural properties allow it to do. Plus, it's solid, and therefore it has more mass. So there's more molecules of greater, and the molecules are, in some cases, they're heavier than the air molecules. But there's more of them because they're denser packed. So they can conduct the heat more efficiently because there's more mass. More molecules vibrating can conduct heat more efficiently than air, which is just a few particles every here and there that bounce around. Air is just an occasional molecule bouncing around compared to steel or aluminum or copper, which are solid. Even steel conducts heat, you know, better than air by far, right? I mean, I would think anyway. Maybe not, but I don't know. I think it is. I think it does. The only thing that you don't want to put in there is something that doesn't conduct heat at all. But I wouldn't put metal in there either. I'm not saying stick metal inside your phone. No, don't do that. Unless you really know what you're doing. But you can put the conductive strips in there. It's just that you might experience later on failures because you didn't understand how the equipment was designed by Apple. Apple was the designer. And if they wanted to put conductive strips in there to conduct the heat out of it, they could have done that. And if they didn't do it, it might cause a failure in the device when you do that later on. That was just another stray thought that came into my mind after talking about design. You know, but you never think you can design something better than the manufacturer. It's not a good idea. I never think that with any manufacturer, especially not Apple. But so in this case, this is an exception where I'm not putting the adhesive. That's an exception. It's a rare exception where I'm not putting the adhesive back under the iPhone battery. That's something I usually follow the advice. But, I mean, I believe the manufacturer. I trust the manufacturer. I believe what they've done with their device was they have the right to have done it. You know, it was their device. They built it. The other thing is, my iPhone doesn't have its little screws anymore. The little screws, I forget what they're called, the tiniest screws that go in there. One of them got stripped, so I just decided not to put the other one back, and I covered the two holes with a tiny piece of electrical tape. So each hole with a piece of electrical tape. That's my solution for that. Those little screws that don't actually do anything. Why are they there? I don't know, but anyway. And they're very, you have to buy a special screwdriver to get them out. What are those little tiny screws? Pentalobe. The Pentalobe screws. Yeah. I don't have those anymore in my iPhone. Anyway, that's just a side note. So what are we up to? Oh, we're way over time again. Or way up to time. We're up to time. We're at our limit here. 80 minutes is kind of a long video, but this is October 6th, 2022. It's 18:03 hours. It's Ward Green. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I hope you're doing well, and hope you have a fantastic day. Enjoy, you know, whatever happens, and thanks for watching. Bye for now.